Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Broadcasting live here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and also you can listen to the live stream at the homepage of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, the chat room in there, and in fact there's probably all sorts of other people that are pirating the show and broadcasting it without my knowledge. Thank goodness for that. My very special guest today is a gourmet soup chef. Now, people don't get it that cooking is very, very, very rarely discussed in conspiracy talk radio in any way, shape, or form, okay? Knowing how to feed yourself so that you, you know, like, for example, I was a flatting in Dunedin. I knew guys who couldn't do toast right, okay? And I'm making, like, layered lasagnas and all this other stuff since I was five, okay? Cooking's really important, man. Have a good feed. Feel better, and also if you know how to put the proper nutrients and stuff like that into, you actually get better too if you happen to be sick or something. So today we have a very special lady from Australia, Angela Foreman from Gourmet Soup Kitchen. I think it is it .com.au?
No, it's Gourmet Soup Kitchen, Vinny.
Gourmet Soup Kitchen. It's not. I've completely misread this entirely. So... my bad.
It's pretty similar.
Soup and soap, eh?
Yeah, well, we use a lot of food ingredients, so, you know, it is creating it just like food.
You're using a lot of food ingredients in soap, you say?
Yeah, heaps of herbs and butters and oils and, you know, it's basically the same thing. You've got to feed your skin, not just your insides.
Well, there was somebody who said to me one time that if you can't eat it, don't put it on your skin.
Exactly, and that's what I do. If you can't eat it, I don't use it.
Okay. Well, in that case, when you were a child, did you get your mouth washed out with soap a lot?
I think developed I remember taste, once.
Developed a taste for it.
Well, we do get quite often, we get the RAF guys and different ones that come in that dare each other to eat the soap, and I tell them they can have the soap for free if they can eat it and swallow it, and I've never had one ever be able to do it.
So they haven't been able to do it, or nobody's taken up the challenge?
No, they're not able. They try because it smells so good you think you can eat it. I make about 140 different products in the shop, not just soap, but, yeah, they smell so good sometimes. They're healthy, but then they all dare each other and it just doesn't work because it's unswallowable.
And how long have you been doing this gig?
Probably about 15 years, but full-time about 10.
Okay. How who supported you in your first 5 years there?
Well, I started it up because I couldn't find things that were completely natural without any toxins. And it was because my eldest son, who's now 22, he had eczema all over his body. And this led me down the whole road of discovering about toxins and all this sort of stuff. I went to a doctor who said, a very brave doctor who's ridiculed, a pediatrician, and he said to me, I can give you pills or I can teach you to save his life. And he did.
So let's get this straight. When you're looking at soap products anywhere, it's this kind of detergent chemical fertilizer, kind of like, I don't know, it's like you can either wash your hair with it or you can clean oil stains off your driveway type stuff. And
yeah.
People are, I don't know, what kind of damage does using regular soap actually do to people?
Well, anything you put on your skin, just like transdermal medicine, will travel through your body and to your liver and your kidneys and God knows where else. And, you know, you're in serious trouble. Well, for example, your soap-free washes, I'm very wary of those because they're usually based on antifreeze. And you know how deadly antifreeze is. If you swallow it, you die. And yet we put it on our skin. And I can't believe the amount of things that are so-called eczema products and psoriasis products. And you read the back of the ingredients and Google them. It's horrendous. Absolutely horrendous.
I mean, they may as well just say, hey, rub this bleach on your back.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I just tell people, well, if you want to use that, just go out and get your car radiator, empty it and tip it on yourself, you know. But if you ask a mechanic, I've actually asked mechanics what antifreeze is like, and it clings to your skin, so it gives you a smooth appearance. But on a cellular level, if you look at what it does to your cells, it actually clings to your cells and suffocates them and mutates them and turns them into skin cancer and all those type of things. It's one of the ways you can get skin cancer.
So as opposed to treating psoriasis or skin diseases with basic chemicals that just treat the symptom, how exactly do your soaps treat the cause in some way and re-nourish the skin with the minerals, nutrients, things like that it needs to actually repair it?
Yeah, well, they're cold processed.
Go ahead.
They're cold processed, so you're not losing any of your minerals. So you're putting in all sorts of things, different recipes for different reasons. For example, I do one for acne, which has propeka and turmeric and different things like that in it, which helps to kill the bacteria in acne, but also nourish the skin. Going back to everything natural, there's an answer for everything in nature, and you can't synthesize nature. And that's what they're trying to do with all these other products, is synthesize nature. And it's not good for us.
Isn't that kind of like playing God?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what they're doing. They're trying to, going back to the antifreeze thing, they're saying you'll have a smoother complexion. And if you listen to the advertisements, you'll say they have a smoother appearance. They word it in a way, and when you know what's really going on, you just go, oh, gosh, it's probably just the antifreeze giving them a nice smooth appearance or some sort of chemical filler. And it's really not doing your lower levels of your skin any good at all.
Well, it wouldn't... In that case, you'd have to keep purchasing this product and keep reapplying it rather than using a herbal product that is designed specifically to give you the ability to fight off whatever it is that's causing that disorder. And eventually you kind of become immune to it.
Exactly. And a lot of people will buy a product and it works for a while and then their body will develop. It'll start to say, you know, get rid of this stuff and it'll stop working. So they'll keep moving on to new products. But that industry is quite happy to have people keep because they keep coming up with new ones. And, the skin can only take so much of a particular chemical and it just says enough. And then it stops making them look smooth and they'll move on to the next one that's being sold at the department store or wherever they're being sold.
Is it kind of like we adapt to the chemical toxins that are being put on us and they start to lose their effect?
I think so, but I think you'll always pay the price. You can't be putting chemicals on your skin and get away with it because it'll go through your system. Even if your skin is dealing with it, it's going to have an impact. You can't put poison on your skin. And just like you can't drink it, although we seem to be eating and drinking it all the time, it's a bit ridiculous.
Well, I said to my friend yesterday, he's from Australia, right? And I just said, walk into a gas station in Adelaide or walk into a gas station in Auckland. You find me one
healthy thing. You've got the whole gas station, as big a gas station as you want. Anywhere you look, you find me one healthy thing. You cannot do it.
There's nothing.
It's not possible.
Well, there's a lot of petroleum byproducts. You know, you've got your lip balms and things in the petrol stations, you know, which are based on petroleum. It's the way it works. Yeah.
I mean, maybe the healthiest thing to eat at a gas station would probably be the magazine display.
Yeah, I'm thinking that.
It's got essential inks?
Probably. But yeah, basically, the way I look at it is we've sort of a filter for the petroleum industry, and that's what a lot of our skin products. That's what it is. It's the waste of the petroleum industry.
The waste petroleum industry. Now hold on a second. This gives me an idea. How many waste byproducts and giant mega evil kind of businesses are there out there that are simply sludging all that toxic waste into our food supply and getting it onto our skin and whatnot? Okay, so the oil industry, huge amount of waste. Boom, they've got all these products and it's contaminating the whole food supply. Boom. Oh, yeah, that's very nice. They're getting rid of it. Fluoridation, when they're producing phosphate fertilizer, they've got all this fluoride that it's illegal to dump, so they sell it, and then it becomes legal to dump in people's water supplies. McDonald's, they have McDonald's.
It just goes on and on, doesn't it?
Yeah.
They're using us as a filter. I mean, I rang up my local water supply recently, the treatment plant, and they just said to me, I'm the first person in 50 years that's asked to remove fluoride, which is ridiculous. I'm sure it's not true. At the end of the conversation, I said, it seems like I know more about water than you, because he didn't even know what fluoride was.
Yeah. My good friend Jonathan Isaacson, he walked up to a mainstream reporter here in New Zealand. I forget his name. He was working for one of the major 7 o'clock in the evening, just after the news, kind of, this is the special report type reporter scumbags, you know? Mm-hmm. The generic type. We all know who they are. And he goes, what's your opinion on fluoridation? And he goes, what's fluoridation? You know, they don't even know what it is. And this is actually a microcosm of the whole world, isn't it? You say, what's your opinion on this thing that's killing you? And I go, what is it that's killing me? I've never heard of it. I've never noticed it.
Well, unless it's on the mainstream media, unless a current affair in Australia, for example, puts it on, everyone thinks it doesn't exist. They're just believing everything they're spoon-fed. And my opinion is, as soon as you do that, as soon as humanity believes everything they're spoon-fed, you've got the tyrants that move in and they just take advantage of you.
The key to all of these solutions, have you noticed how the most complicated problems always seem to have the simplest solutions?
Absolutely.
Let's talk about this about soap products and things like that in somebody's daily life. I mean, how often would you expect people to be washing themselves? You know, some people like have a shower, every day. And they're just doing office work and things like that. Some people shower twice a day if they're in the tropics or whatever. I don't know. Is there something healthy about it?
Well, I think, especially if your water's fluoridated, I'd be trying to shower as little as possible because that goes through your skin, just like transdermal medicine. And you're being medicated through your skin. So not only are you drinking it, you can actually take in more in your bath than what you or in your shower than what if you were drinking it. So I just know I've got a daughter who's chemically sensitive, which we can go into a bit later, but she started avoiding the shower, and I didn't understand why. And she was saying the shower's making her sick, and sure enough, it was. And it just happened that I had a person come in that works for, in my case, Riverina Water in Wagga Wagga, and they came in and told me what was in it, someone with a conscience. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that's what's going on. That's why she doesn't want to have a shower.
Yeah. Continue.
They told me about some of the stuff that was in it, like the lead, the mercury, the heavy metals that were being put in with this fluoridation. Just horrendous.
Now, you ask any municipal water supplier of that nature, Is the fluoride pharmaceutical grade? No, it's not. It never
has
been.
We're importing it from China, aren't we? Isn't it coming in from China?
Oh, yeah.
From what I've heard.
Well, I don't know specifically about the wee business. I mean, maybe Australia is importing it from China. I've try as I may, I've called up the water companies here in Auckland, New Zealand, get passed from one person to the other, to the other, to the other. All I was asking was, where did the fluoride come from? Nobody has any idea.
No, they don't. But there is. I've looked at brochures from China where it says it's a water treatment or it's a pesticide. They've got the multiple uses, so you can either use it as a pesticide or you can treat your water with it. It just, you know, I went to
put that on a can of Roundup or something. You can either kill your weeds or kill your population.
Exactly.
It's multifunctional.
Mm-hmm. I went to a fundraiser the other week for an overseas country to get them safe water. And, you know, we joked at the end, it's like, how about some safe water for Australians now? You know, and New Zealanders, obviously, because we're not drinking safe water. We're turning good water into poison water.
Yeah. I've noticed when we water plants with municipal water just out of the hose, out of the tap or something like that, the plants basically, they become stagnant. They like don't grow kind of thing or as much as they would. And one time we tried watering it with kind of filtered water and stuff like that. And they started growing much, much faster.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the wrong season for them to grow as well.
Yeah. As soon as you have to start watering your garden with town water, your garden just goes downhill. It's pretty ridiculous. Well,
and also, it gets progressively downhill because you get the fluoride buildup in the soil because that's not running off.
No, and then it goes into your vegetables that you're growing and all that sort of thing. So yeah. One of the first things I tell people when they come into the shop is when the children have got eczema or they've developed sensitivities is don't drink the water. You know, it sounds like a ridiculous statement, but, I mean, if you've got fish, you don't put tap water, straight tap water into the tank, because the fish die, and that's a bit of a warning signal.
Like the canary in the coal mine is the goldfish in your tap water.
Yes, that's it.
That's a good equivalent, I think. There, all right, Angela Foreman from GourmetSoapKitchen.com. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream, just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president, it seems. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And, Walker Walker, Australia is my guest. Apparently, she gets a... I made the mistake of saying Gourmet Soup Kitchen, and apparently she gets that sometimes from... and it's only, it seems to be men specifically. I can just imagine the phone call. Hey, mate, do you do luncheons? You go, well, mate, it depends if you curse a lot and need your mouth washed up with soap. I suppose we could knock you up a bad language sandwich if we really wanted to.
Yes, no, it's at least once a week, but it's always men. I don't know why. And they come in and they'll say things like, do you cater for 50, and, you know, for lunch? And it's just like, I've only gotten a sandwich out the back. and then they realise, and they're so embarrassed, or, you know, sometimes they'll buy a soap, you know, just because they're so embarrassed.
Well, yeah, and that was something that occurred to me as well. I mentioned that on the break. I thought it was Gourmet Soup Kitchen, and I was very embarrassed about it as well. I was thinking about buying some of your soap, but I can't afford it.
I'll have to send some money your way.
All right. Now, something else occurred to me as well over the break is that I don't know much about soap because I haven't talked about it, thought about it. So it means that I'm in an inadequate position to ask appropriate questions. In such situations, the best thing to do is listen.
Okay, well, soap making, there's many different methods of making it. You can cook it, and usually the commercial soaps, say in the supermarket, they cook it and they extract the glycerin out of it, which is the goodness, and they're usually using a pretty poor oil to start with. And that glycerin's worth more than the soap. So, you know, you're getting your 5 bars for $2.50 or what, I don't even know how much it's worth these days. But you're really getting something. You know, you start washing with it and your skin dries out pretty quickly. A good soap, you'll lather with it and it'll make you softer. You can be in the shower for an hour, which is probably not a good idea for water suppliers, but the more you use it, the softer you get. But, yeah, there's a whole process in making it. And after, you know, 10, 15 years of making soap, if I still make mistakes, it's fairly technical at times and quite dangerous. You're working with a high alkaline. It's actually made from soda ash, and so you're mixing soda ash with oils and butters. And when you're doing that, I wear a full face helmet and gloves and apron and all that sort of stuff, because it's not that it's poison, it's just that it's high alkaline. And then once those combine, it changes the molecules of the oils and it turns it into soap. So it's still a solid block of oil, but the molecules have changed, and that's what makes it lather. And that's a true soap. And that has to sit there for about 4 to 6 months to cure, just like a good cheese. And that's how you know it's a good soap.
When was soap first developed?
I've sort of done a fair bit of research, and I think it started, but I could be wrong, I think it was the Egyptians, but don't get me wrong, because then the Mediterranean people will get really upset that I've come up with the wrong country. they were, you know, they had their pots and they had, you know, over the fire, and they noticed that, this is how I think it happened, they noticed that when the oil dripped into the ash, those ashes would then become, they would lather, and that's how soap started.
Okay. And you also wanted to talk about chemical poisoning?
Yeah, the main reason why I wanted to come on here, I mean, my background is not being involved with toxins and really getting away from those. I mean, I see children all the time and adults. They'll come in and they'll start using natural things and they'll get better. But I also try to find out what is causing their eczema or their psoriasis, which is an immune system. You know, there's something going on with their immune system. And you know, I've had 5 children altogether. It was my 4th child, completely healthy, no problems before school, and went to daycare and no problems. Kindergarten, and May of kindergarten, she came home one day and she looked like E.T. when he was dying. Remember in that scene, and he was grey and ashen. I think everyone can visualise that. Yeah.
He's going, ouch.
and it was terrifying, and I took her to the doctors. They didn't know what was wrong with her. And I didn't know what caused that, and they just thought maybe she's got an allergy to a virus, which I found out since doesn't really exist. And things kept happening. She was having sore muscles, and I put it down to what a lot of parents do, and put it down to the schools are a dirty place, you know, with lots of viruses, and it's just part of growing up. Yeah, and that's what I did. And by year 2, she was covered in welts and burns. And this is my industry. You can imagine I make salves to fix eczema and psoriasis and all that sort of thing. And I was trying to identify why, what sort of food allergy was it, what was going on, and what on earth would be making my child, who had good skin, suddenly be covered in eczema. And it was like it was a burn on her arms and the back of her legs and her face. And she was ill and weak and by year two, the teachers were putting down towels and putting her on the floor in the classroom because she was in pain in the classroom. They tried all sorts of things. And start of year three, I noticed that over the school holidays, this is after ruling out all the allergies, dogs, cats, foods, you name it, she went back to school. I dropped her off on the first day of year three, and her skin was clear. And I picked her up, and she was covered in the welts and burns. And I thought, I finally twigged, what are they using to clean the schools with? And I went down to the school, and I got the 12 MSDSs of the chemicals they were using. And they were 12 of the most horrendous things you could ever imagine. I was able to identify the ingredients immediately, things like ethylene glycol, monobutyl ether. The list goes on. I spent yesterday trying to pronounce them because to say it on one thing to read it, but another thing to say it on radio. Things that children should not be exposed to. And I suddenly realised what it was, why she was so ill over the years, and it went on from there. I went to the education department, and instead of getting a response that I expected, which was, oh my goodness, I showed them the MSDSs, they looked at me with a blank look as if to say, you're crazy, like poisons don't hurt children. So I pulled my children out of school. And her eczema went away and she got better. They did demand that I put my child back in school, which I did, even though I knew what it was. And over the next month, she had a full chemical collapse and to the point where she was crawling on the floor like a crab. She was dying. Her body had said, I've had enough of these chemicals. And it wasn't going to take it anymore. And, of course, they did the thing where they blamed the parent. Here I am, I'm into organic food, I'm healthy as. And they were trying to say that maybe she's got malnutrition, maybe she's got leukemia. And the way they treated me was absolutely horrendous. And I don't know, do you want me to go on from here, Vinny?
Continue, like I said, I really just want to sit here and listen and let you go.
Okay. Well, after she had the full collapse, I pulled my children, both of them, out because I had another one in kindergarten. It was a new one by that time, actually. And I knew the dangers of these chemicals. These MSDSs said don't use around children. That's a heavy industrial chemical. Don't use for long periods of time. Will cause liver damage, kidney failure, cancer, you name it. It was written there that it will do it. And, if I go through the MSDSs with the ingredients, the gases were formed if they come into, contact with nitrites, which is found in human sweat, water, dirt, everything that's on a child, where you're getting these gases. So, they're wiping the desks with these things. The children's arms are on these desks. But regardless, these things are evaporating in the classrooms. So anyway, I kicked off a big stink, and I was lucky to get one local television station to do a story on it about me pulling my children out. And the education department finally decided that they're going to look into this. So we had meetings and a formal trial was conducted where they removed the cleaning chemicals, first of all, from Bridget's classroom. That's my daughter's name, Bridget. And that didn't work because they kept putting her in the other rooms. And so she'd be coming back ill, once again with problems. And they just treated me like a real pest, as if I didn't know what I was talking about. And at some of these meetings, our regional director, I sat there with him. We went over the MSDSs and we had quite a few people at these meetings. And, a lot of the women and different people at the meetings would say, let's not use this. So they finally decided to remove the chemicals from the whole school. And Bridget saw a specialist in Sydney and he had warned me about the unflued gas heating, which I didn't know about because New South Wales is the only state where it's legal to have unflued gas heating. So Bridget was going along fine. They cleaned up the whole school, steam cleaned the carpets with hot water, nothing else. And she had another collapse in June. And even the principal, who had treated me horrendously, rang me up and said, I don't think you should send her, because she was coming home sleepy. You know, kids home from school was going straight to bed. And so the crash was coming again. So we had another meeting about the unfluid gas heating, and I sat there with the regional director and I just said, Peter, why haven't you removed this from the other schools? Why are you still using these chemicals when you know these chemicals are hurting children? And he just said, well, prove it, Angela. I hope you got deep pockets. And it was said in a very horrible way. And that's their general attitude at the education department, is I felt that there was just absolutely no duty of care for the children. And this is happening across Australia. I don't know if it's happening in New Zealand or the rest of the world. But basically there's no laws to protect children from what the cleaners, the contracted cleaners, are using to clean the classrooms. So they can use whatever they want, even if it's banned in other countries, to clean, and children are suffering. I mean, we've got that much illness going on in schools, and children are going home from school ill, and parents are thinking they're just picking up flus, but is it chemical poisoning quite often? Have you ever, considered that, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to tell you that poisons cause illness. There might be different symptoms. Some children get really hyperactive. Some get very lethargic. Some get terrible headaches. Some get very angry. Some develop genetic diseases, which at my daughter's school, there's a few kids with genetic diseases that their parents don't have. The parents have got the same genes. Parents have no problems. But the children at Bridget's school, there's one who's dying from a rare genetic disease that, from what I've heard, is only found in primary school children up to this stage and no symptoms before school started. So what triggers a genetic disease? Poisons and chemicals quite often. It's like a catalyst.
Well, isn't that interesting that the environment is what, in true fact, causes the disease? Your genetics simply allow you whether or not you've got a susceptibility to it. And what I've found is that this is actually a bit of a con job, because when you go to the doctor and they've got a genetic predisposition to something, instead of saying, we need to change the environment that our child's in so it's now healthier so that this disease doesn't show up, they blame one of the parents for giving the child this terrible, terrible affliction. And
this
guilt trip thing. And particularly, I used to look after autistic boys, and this is what they did to them. I think, what was it? They claimed that it's on the mother's side or whatever. I claim that it's on the pharmaceutical company vaccine side.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Of the genetic code. And they go around to all these specialist after specialist, alternative after alternative, and none of them work, and they drain their bank account, and they eventually lose hope. And then when somebody comes out with biomedical therapy that has had a lot of success in curing the affliction, they're too browbeaten by their previous experiences to even want to cure their child anymore.
Yeah, I've come across that because I've had parents come to me since this has happened. And even though they hear the information, they just don't believe it anymore. And, I mean, you can reverse. I mean, Bridget is now running around healthy. I've pulled my children out of school altogether now because they've got a formaldehyde sensitivity. Like, we all haven't got a formaldehyde sensitivity. Instead of treating the cause, they're treating the symptoms, the doctors. They've forgotten all about the causes. That's the problem.
Indeed. We'll talk about more of the causes and hopefully some solutions after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. You can also join us in the chat room if you Google Vinny Eastwood Chat. And I think maybe we might start opening the caller line up in the second hour too. The number will be 218-339-8525 in a minute.
Thank you. broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, supported by vaccine manufacturers and Rockefeller Research Institutes from Day Dot and 33rd Degree Freemasonic Lodges, where we do all our dirty business dealings and get other people from the truth movement into absolute poverty by vaccinating their children and giving them autism and making them pay all the compliance costs of pharmaceutical drugs by government mandate. Oh, yeah.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much, Godfather. An awesome dude.
Well, thank you.
Okay. I would like to broach this topic with a little bit more sensitivity than I'm famous for. You were talking about chemical contamination of the food supply, the water supply, the, I would deem it the everything supply, including your air supply and your information supply. That's what I'm talking about here. When we broach any subject, particularly health issues, there are so many inputs that people are unaware of. And we were discussing over the break about autism. Some people haven't vaccinated their children and are surprised, very surprised and puzzled when they become autistic. And it doesn't look to them that autism isn't just caused by vaccines because they're vaccines. It's caused by chemicals and contamination, like mercury and things like that. And unbeknownst to a lot of people, there are many sources of these incredibly dangerous chemicals that people are often exposed to. Anybody who has ever broken an energy-saving light bulb would have to... This is the instructions. You have to leave the room for like 15 minutes or something like that, so the vapor clears. Okay, there's only like, what? Half a milligram of mercury in there, and you've got to leave the room. And when you clean it up, you have to wear rubber gloves. You have to grab a shovel and brush, and you have to get a jar with a resealable lid. And then you scoop it up very, very gently and try and get, and make sure you get all of it, put it into that jar, close the lid, and then you have to go to a very special recycling plant where you have to pay to have it be disposed of properly. Because if it makes its way into the trash supply, that 0.5 milligram of mercury can contaminate 20,000 litres of drinking water in the water table as it rains and it seeps through. Think about it, ladies and gentlemen. You are surrounded. Angela, welcome back.
No worries. We are surrounded, but how many people don't know about that mercury? I don't have those light bulbs on purpose, but I never knew that, what you just said then. I'm pretty sure most people wouldn't know that, that we have to do that.
Well,
we'd just be picking it up.
When you grow up, you get into an education system, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that they don't teach you, and they spend many, many years not teaching you that stuff. And so now you've got to spend many, many years learning it.
Exactly.
It's like you're back to blimmin' primary school now. That's what it feels like for me.
Yeah, it is like that. I mean, I had to do so much research. I mean, it was already my field, is reversing toxicology and all that sort of stuff. But then when this happened with my daughter, I had to go back to the drawing board, and I didn't just believe what I was spoon-fed. I went back to the... You go back and read all the documents that say the chemical companies, their directions for their staff. I mean, these guys that move, say, one of the lesser toxic ingredients out of these 12 mixed chemical things that they were using at the schools, for example, Neodol, I read a thing where they have to do 5-hour shifts every 10 days so they can detoxify for the rest of the time. And this is what's in your liquid detergent, your washing powders. It's a surfactant, and it's so toxic. And people are just using it. Every time they wash their dishes, they're in trouble. And their biggest risk, for example, of this particular surfactant is human contact. But they say, oh, it doesn't matter because apparently people only put a drop in their water and that small amount won't affect them too much. But, you know, you add it with the other 300 chemicals you come into contact with that day, you're in serious trouble. And I think it was 356 chemicals the average female comes into contact with, because makeup and all that sort of stuff. in one day, and each one of them has been tested individually, you've got 356 odd chemicals in a day that were tested separately. It's pretty scary.
I do think, again, it's so hard to isolate problems now because none of them are problems on their own. They're all part of a cumulative causality, I think.
Yeah, I feel like I'm playing Space Invaders sometimes. I find the chemicals and there's more and I've just got to shoot away more. It's like a game of Space Invaders to me now.
It's funny. And once you start shooting at them, like at the politicians and stuff like that, and you manage to blow a few of them away, they change direction and they start moving faster.
Yeah, it's all departmentalized, or I don't know how you pronounce that, but I have gone to the my principal, along to the regional director, to his boss, right up to Mr. Pickley, who's the New South Wales Education Minister in this case, shown them this information, and Mr. Pickley will send me back, or Piccoli will send me back to, he'll say, this is up to your local. And the local will say, well, this is up to Mr. Piccoli. No one is taking responsibility. No one is doing anything about it. No one is warning the public that their children potentially are exposed to what the chemical company's own documentation says not to use around children, not to clean with around children. And everyone's just passing the buck. They can't be sued. You know, I can't sue them for my child. My daughter now is overtoxified, as in she's chemically sensitive. I'm reversing that. There is ways. But there's nothing I can do because they're protected. So they can just do what they like, claim with what they like, and we're all, as you know, all us humans, who put our children in these places, we have no recourse. They're not going to be in trouble. And that, to me, that's completely... it's completely wrong.
Well, it depends what your perspective of wrong is. If you're a eugenicist sociopath who has a lust for world domination, thinks that everybody's cattle and slaves and would be better off dead for our own good, it would be perfectly right.
Do you know, it's funny you say that because the penny completely dropped one day. I was just at work and just thinking, and then I just thought, oh my gosh, you know, I'd learned about this stuff that you're talking about now, and I can recognise the people who I know as to people now.
Oh, sorry, Angela, you're breaking up a little bit there. Yeah, Angela, you're breaking up pretty awfully. Angela, can you hear me?
Just looked at me and just got a blank stare.
Okay, it turns out Angela can't hear me, and she's fading out into the background there. Okay, so AFR, if you can hear me, can you please drop Angela from the call and just quickly bring her back up? Okay, so we'll just see if we can reconnect her if we can. That connection's going a little bit fuzzy there. Okay. I've conceived for a long time, that I can't wake up, walk out my door, or turn on the television without being exposed to some kind of poisonous crap that's going to kill me. Seriously. You walk out the door and you see these smart meters that are being installed over everybody's place. You jump into your car and you go to the carbon monoxide fumes and stuff coming out of there, clogging up the place, and the lead and the petrol and all of that kind of stuff. And you're wearing your clothes that are made out of a polyester, which is an oil derivative, which causes cancer when it's in contact with your skin. Yeah, I can hear you, Angela. I'm just in the middle of a rant here. And in fact, rantus interruptus. Here we go. Thank you very much. I could have gotten away on me there. Angela, you were saying? When we started coming off onto break or something, I forget what it was you were talking about, but we're about a minute away from...
About,
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was talking about the blank stares that I got, and I could recognise who I really think knows what's going on and really doesn't want to do anything about it. And the reasons, I mean, we can guess the reasons, and I think we probably both would agree on the reasons. But, yeah, I can identify those people now and their reactions. You know, the other ones, their body language would be, oh, my goodness, you know, there'd be different guys, would, you know, they'd be sitting there with their crossing their legs and sort of touching their head with worry, and the other ones would be just sitting there blatantly, prove it, I hope you got deep pockets. And I said to one of them, I said to our director, I said, how do you sleep at night? And they said, very well, thank you. In a bizarre way, when you're talking about a child who's terribly ill from these cleaning chemicals. And I said, why aren't you stopping the other schools? Why aren't you doing anything about this? And he just said, well, I'm nobody. I can't do anything about it. And yet the minister sends me back to this same man. It just doesn't make any sense. Or maybe it does now.
Yeah, well, thing is, if something doesn't make sense, it means somebody who's insane is in charge. You know, these people are just freaking nuts.
I definitely agree with that, and I have no faith in them. Yep, yeah. They sure are.
Okay, and we shouldn't have any faith on them because that's what you're supposed to reserve for something that's a god, okay? And as far as I know, any man who starts thinking himself a god starts to become the devil. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com with Angela Foreman. The call-in number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. The VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Back in a minute. My very special guest is the gourmet soap kitchen lady from Wagga Wagga, Australia. In fact, I've always found the term Wagga Wagga to be an incredibly amusing thing, and there's so many Australian names that I just find the sound of quite funny.
Yeah, it's a bit ridiculous, isn't it? I'm the crazy Wagga Wagga soap lady who was talking during the break. I didn't turn off my mic. So we've both done something silly today.
Indeed, indeed. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to participate in the silliness, the number is 218-339-8525, 218-339-8525. Conference and lines are now open for you to call in if you have any questions about chemicals, soaps, or any stuff like that on how to remove them. Or another thing that I wanted to do is, like, as a person who's exposed to this this kind of information, there's an inherent frustration. Sometimes you can get a bit low. When I first discovered all of this stuff and started going out into the streets and stuff like that, it was quite depressing, frankly. So if you'd like to call up, if you're feeling a bit low, trust me, I'm a very, very good person to talk to when you're not feeling too great. So call in 218-339-8525, and I'll try and cheer you up as best I can. A little bit of counsel in there. Something like that.
Okay, it can be a little bit scary too. Did you ever have any problem? I've been broken into. I've had my computer fried. Police. I thought it was all ridiculous at first. I had a current affair. I think it was a current affair. Was going to do a story. Two news stories were done locally. Current affair were going to run it. They did this. They taped it and then they canned it because who knows why? Well, we probably all know why. And so-called Aaron Brockovich's law firm were going to get involved. Well, they don't want to touch it either. They're all excited about it, and then someone must have said, no, we're not doing this. And no doctor will sign off. If anyone knows of a doctor that will, doctors in this position are very scared to do it because they will be disbarred or, you know, it's very scary for them. I mean, to have people break into my house because of the information that I have, was terrifying to me. That what they did was they stole all the little bits of paper, all the notes that I had of the people that I spoke to in the departments, in the chemical company departments as well as in the education department, the people who were willing to help. They took all those bits of paper. The day before my interview with Current Affair, they took all my files, which I thought, I must have misplaced them. This is ridiculous, you know, and I searched the house where I always keep them. They weren't there. The 2 days after the interview, they were back there, stacked in a way that I would never stack them. And I rang up the producer at the time and she said, contact the police, which I thought, that's a bit ridiculous. And the police came out and they said they'd heard of this before. And I thought, you're kidding me. And then the next day I get a call from the fingerprinter. She came out and she checked the files. And I was thinking, no, this couldn't be, you know. And she found very large male fingerprints. Now, I'm a single parent and there's no large males in my house. I said, are you sure they're not my thumbprints? And she said, no, they're fresh, very large male thumbprints. And she said, unless you're a Neanderthal, they're not yours. And no one else had touched those files, just me. That's the kind of thing that goes on, because it can be quite scary. And I got to the point where I wanted to run and hide and not have anything to do with this. But then, at the end of the day, what are we here for if we're not to stand up? And if I can help parents to identify why their children are getting sick, well, that's why I'm coming on your show today. And public speaking is my biggest fear. I mean, shaking like a leaf just to get on here, but I had to do it because if we don't stand up on some level and if we just keep falling for these bullies, heaven help us.
Well, I hope that I've been nice and pleasant for you. Have you calmed down since shaking like a leaf?
Yeah, I have. I'm okay. I had to have a friend here to help me out just so that I could have the strength to do it, but that's all right.
Well, indeed, it's one of my donors, John, who has gotten you on here. And this is the reason why the show works so well. I mean, in my opinion, of course, I'm not biased, is that everybody gets the chance to use this platform for whatever they wish it. If they want a guest or even a friend or anything like that to come on, they surely can. And the whole idea is basically this. If you listen to everybody talking about everything, you gain something that very few people have these days, perspective. Once you have gained perspective, you are capable of then having discernment.
Exactly. And once you start to have that perspective, it's watching the regular media and listening to it, it just makes me sick now. It's not really the media, is it?
It is not. Well, in fact, actually it is, but it's media. It's media, Jim, but not as we know it.
Yeah.
Well, it's... The role of the media is to be a fourth estate, a law unto themselves, to keep a watch on the wealthy, the powerful, and the scumbaggery elements that are within society. For the only way to prevent the growth of a mold or a cancer or a lichen of some description is to apply it to the sunlight. If people are not having that light shone on those that wish to reside in the darkness so they can fester and grow, it will cover everything eventually.
Well, exactly, but obviously you don't have anyone sponsoring your show that runs these major chemical companies, so thank goodness for that.
Well, I don't know. If they came up to me and said, hey, Vinny bro, we'll give you a couple of million bucks if you stop talking about our chemical company on your on your live radio broadcast, I go, sweet as, and I'll take the money. And then I'll still keep talking about it, but on my YouTube channel. or I'll just give 50 grand or something like that worth of equipment like Mac computers and nice microphones and a few cameras or something like that to some people who I believe do deserve it and are exposing it. Like the person I'd give the money to off the top of my head would be Dr. Muriel Watts here in New Zealand. You never heard of this lady, you really should. She is, without doubt, and I've interviewed a lot of people, she's without doubt the most professional and experienced and credible person that I've ever interviewed virtually on any subject whatsoever. And she specifically just focuses on pesticides. The depth of her knowledge on that one subject is unparalleled, in my professional opinion. And I don't have a professional opinion because I don't like the idea of professionalism in general, because the world's currently run by professionals. How's that working out for you so far? Not too well, I would have thought. But the whole idea is you can take the money, but there'll always be loopholes. Okay? Always.
Yes.
And I feel that if the enemy is willing to finance your operation, take their money and use it against them.
Oh, that sounds like a good plan.
You know, and there's people out there, like we had the Greek the other day. He's an inventor and he'll take your whole world and flip it upside down and spin it all around and turn it into scrambles kind of thing with the knowledge he possesses. But he was offered a substantial sum of money for one of his devices from a big evil cartel company and blah, 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 blah. And, of course, he didn't take it because he's got the moral ethic and he's a good man and that kind of thing. Whereas had he done it, he could have financed innumerable other projects through other people, and I see that as the opportunity missed. But that's just my opinion, okay? Because everybody makes their own moral choices, and I think we all have to just basically take responsibility for them and not criticize others for making choices we would not have made in the same situation because we weren't there.
That's true. That's true. But yeah, pesticides. Who was that doctor you were saying?
Dr. Muriel Watts.
Okay.
M-E-R-I-E-L. In fact, Pesticide Action Network New Zealand is the organisation that she fronts.
Sounds like a good organisation. But speaking of pesticides, one of the the start of the school season, my daughter actually walked on some pesticides at school, which the school is supposed to be chemical free, but it's funny they've got those dead lines, you know, of grass around all the edges for long jump. And she came back with bruised feet. And 6 weeks later, I find out it was frostbite. This is the type of thing these pesticides can do. It turns out that her blood vessels shrunk because she'd walked on this Roundup or whatever it was. And her feet froze, even though it doesn't snow here in Wagga. It's cool, but it's not freezing. There's another side effect from chemicals. Very unusual, the first time the doctor had ever seen it. And I was supposed to put her on a huge dose of this, prescription medicine to expand her blood or something like that. And there are alternatives out there. So I took her over to a friend's place who had a machine which they're not allowed to use anymore. Don't know if you've heard of George Lukowski's multiple wave oscillator.
No, no.
After 6 weeks of suffering with this feet problem, which is a form of frostbite she had, it was better in 24 hours. So there are alternatives out there, but you certainly don't get them in regular medicine.
Hmm. Well, where's the money coming from to finance regular medicine? It's a long trail. Rockefeller's deeply involved, a lot of medical research. In fact, they're practically overlords of the medical field, you know, so tied in with all the universities with funding projects and blah, 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 all over the place. And it comes from this very eugenicist mindset of just basically trying to milk every available dollar out of you while killing you and making you an ineffective member of society and then just making off with all the goodies.
Yeah, they own the chemical companies that make us sick. And then they own the medicine, which is also making us sick. Heaven help us. But I don't know if you've heard, this is from a source that I have in Australia, a fantastic man who does nutritional medicine, saves people every day. People die, so-called dying of cancer and et cetera, et cetera. And he fixes them through just nutritional supplements, very cheap. He's saying at the moment we've got 2 weeks and we won't be able to get any more nutritional medicine. Have you heard much about that? Now, that's... For my daughter, they've poisoned her, and now they're going to deny her what's helping her to get better, because you can't put someone who's been overtoxified on mainstream medicine because that'll kill them. But, yeah, they're going to put a stop to that. So that's – and most people – it's not in the media. No one's talking about it, that we're going to lose the ability to be able to access natural medicine.
Now, that's Codex Alimentarius, isn't it?
Yes, that nasty Codex. They're not one of my favourite people. You know, you look at their website, they're out to protect the world. What a joke. What a joke.
No, no, well, the thing is, it's like doublespeak. I'm out to protect the world, but it's my world that I want to protect, not yours.
I'm out to protect my investments. I'm out to protect my money. But, yeah, people think that they're heroes. That's what gets me. They're just – and once you know, once you see through it all and you discover what's really going on, it's sickening. But so all you can do is just try and help people find out. And as you've said, you know, it gets to you after a while sometimes because people just don't listen quite often. But, you know, I've been there where I didn't know what was going on. I've always been a little bit aware, a fair bit aware and health conscious. But once you really know what's going on, you see these people that are giving these speeches, for example, about genetically modified foods, and they're heroes. They're going to go and give it to the Africans. They're going to get all their genetically modified foods and their vaccines. Just makes you sick. And people are saying, God bless you. And, I mean, you'd relate to that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'd relate to poisoning people and then having people tell me, God bless you.
Isn't it just ridiculous?
But it gets to the point where you're living in opposite land. Okay?
Yeah, that's what it is.
It's not everything is not as it seems. Everything is the exact opposite of how it's portrayed. So let's say you go to, I don't know, the Cancer Society. Oh, they're there to help find a cure for cancer. No, they're not. They're there to propagate cancer, okay? They're there to put this idea out that cancer's cool and trendy and put it on the back of everybody's mind. And then usurp the money from people so that they can fund massive giant pharmaceutical companies who produce drugs that cause more cancer.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to replicate nature. The cancer cures are all there. I know the cancer cures. It's they're all there in nature. So these guys in their labs and their white coats are down there. People are shaving off their hair for these people to, you know, put the money in the coffers of the cancer industry. And the cures are there.
See?
And I was telling my mate last night, you know, why would they suppress cannabis as oil as a cure for cancer? I go, well, because the doctor gets $5,000 commission if he prescribes chemotherapy, and then the government pays $25,000, and then you pay the other $25,000, and so the pharmaceutical company makes $55,000 out of you dying. We'll be right back. As opposed to like trying to plant a fruit.
To fly to New Zealand by plane from New York City, it takes 22 hours. So from the Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly all the time, and 6 hours on a plane is like a lot, and 19 is wrong. And they distract you. They feed you, and then they feed you some more, and then they feed you. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. Have your dessert, you prick. Give me that dessert. Have a Bloody Mary. Yeah, give me a whiskey sour. Yeah, give me whatever you got. Just more liquor, more liquor, more liquor. And then when you're done, there's still 16 hours to go. If you want to know what it's like, you can experience going to New Zealand. It's very simple. Sit in a chair for 19 hours and take your hands and press your head as hard as you can. And don't stop. Don't stop. 19 hours, just like this. And then at the end of 19 hours, you pull your hands off and you feel like you're in New Zealand. You certainly won't feel like you're home. They say that New Zealand's beautiful, and I don't know, because by the time I got over the jet lag, I had to go. And it seems to me, if you're going to travel for 19 hours to another country, when you get there, they should have the common courtesy to speak another language. I did not fly all this way to hear English again.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest, Angela Foreman from the Gourmet Soap Kitchen.com in Wagga Wagga. I'd love to see. In fact, it's so funny, I'll say it again. In Wagga Wagga.
I didn't always live here. I really think they should change their name.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up here.
You should change it to Wishy Washy or something. It would suit the council.
Exactly. It would. Mm. It's not the most normal of names of a town, is it?
Hey, in fact, that'd be a really good name for a soup business. A soap business. Wishy Washy.
Wishy Washy.
It's like wishy, like you wish you had this kind of quality soap, and it washes you. So hence, it's wishy washy.
I might just put that on the, you know, I might just take claim to that name.
Go for your life. I come up with like $1 million ideas every day, but the problem with having $1 million idea, you've got to put about $1 million worth of work into it in order to get that money.
Yeah, there's not big money in soap making. I can tell you that now, Vinny. It's you do it for the love of it if you're going to do it properly.
Well, that's if you are doing it properly, and I have encountered in my time a lot of these boutique soap makers and things like that who run their own little shops, and I always wondered, you know, how could you make a living out of just selling a cleaning product with a little shop and stuff like that? But I mean, is it really hard or what?
Yeah, it's pretty hard. I mean, The way I get by is I hand out samples, because when people try it, people think, oh, you know, I can get 5 soaps for the price of one of yours. You know, those rubbishy. I did try a soap recently from the supermarket. I picked the best one I could possibly find. Within a few seconds, I thought my blood was running cold. You know, it was horrible, the dryness. So you hand out samples, and that's what I do. And then people come back and you know, I'll get men. Probably half of my customers are men, because they like the fact that it's just head to toe. They don't feel dry. They don't have to do anything. They can wash their hair. You know, it's all done. It's easy. It's just keeping those customers, and you can't compromise on your products. That's the key, because there's plenty of soap out there that's rubbish. And, you know, like your goat's milk soaps, for example, it's basically palm olive with a bit of goat's milk powder sprinkled in. It's not good. So you've really got to source, and you've got to find out who's doing it properly and how they're doing it.
Well, it's like uncovering a conspiracy just so you can wash yourself.
Yeah, there's another conspiracy. Soap conspiracy. You know, and you get your people, some people at the markets that are just buying commercial soap and passing it off as homemade soap. And then people use it and go, well, I might as well go to the supermarket. But yeah, it's very expensive. Like, I use organic olive oil. I'm lucky enough to have local sources, so I know everything comes from. And but yeah, it's not cheap. So I think my soap, you know, the average bar will be about $7, which seems like a lot, but it'd be about $18 if you were to sell it in Melbourne, you know, or in some major city through a retail outlet. You just can't afford to. I don't really wholesale for that reason, because I barely get by on selling it at $7 a bar. It's like good cheese next to bad cheese. You know, you've got your cheap cheese and you've got your Italian or your fancy aged cheese and all that sort of stuff. Or like comparing a Mercedes with a Hyundai or something. It's completely different.
Well, it's about quality, right, and over quantity. And I've found that that's what the free market, as it's alleged, is supposed to actually support. But just like everything else, it's the direct opposite. Okay, they say we're going to do free market, we're going to encourage entrepreneurs to have high quality products and enter into the market with competition. But what they're really saying is, what we're going to do is we're going to make compliance costs and the cost of living so high that even if you did want a business doing something good quality and you were even capable of making it running, you'd have to work harder than you should ever have to in order to survive.
Well, you certainly do. And soap making is not an easy thing to do. It's quite physical. But yeah, it's, and you'll find also companies that they might start off good and then say they'll get bought out or they start going large. Say if I'll never sell, put it that way, because what they'll do is then you get all your company directors together and they'll say, well, let's cut the cost. Let's start using palm oil. Let's use a cheaper olive oil. It just gets, in order to make profits, they have to reduce the quality of the product. So, yeah, that's how it works with soap making. You're better off to actually know your soap maker, really.
Yeah. Well, it's like that with so many things. It is, if you have a personal relationship, it can open so many doors. In terms of just knowing, like my father, he told me one thing when it came to his choice of friends. He says, I have friends who can do things. I have friends who can make things. And sure enough, because he's got had such a strong social network or whatever, invariably anything he wanted to get done, he would have friends who are skilled and capable to help him out. And I think that this is something on the part of the consumer can latch on to as well, that you really do have to get to know your local business people, the people who aren't going to screw you over and what have you. Like, and it goes for anything, okay? If you've got a real good mechanic who does you an incredible good deal or whatever, usually you'll keep going back to them. And occasions I'll take a box of beers in there after they've finished working on my car at like, I don't know, like at 30% of the price of any other quote that I've gotten, and sat down and had a few drinks with them and got to know them as people and that sort of thing, and build a rapport. I believe everybody who does the right thing deserves your attention and your time, because usually people who do the right thing are the ones who appreciate the people who decide to take the time to get to know them, decide to take the time to get to know their products and their business, and decide to take the time to basically care.
Yeah, and also sourcing your products, like if you're passionate about something. And I believe in buying things off people who invent things, for example, because they never compromise. It's their passion, whether it be vitamins or soap products. I mean, I make about 140 different things, as I said earlier. I make a deodorant, for example, that you can wear the same shirt for 3 days and you don't have any odour. So natural things work better. I also make ointments that work better than cortisone creams. But yeah, I've learnt from that I always buy my things from people who either invent something or they're completely passionate about what they're doing, and they certainly usually don't have a lot of money. That's the key.
That's the thing. In this society, if you want to get rich, you're going to have to screw people over.
Exactly. You would. You'd have to. Yeah, it costs a lot of money to do things properly. It's the way it's designed, and that's why most products, once they go multinational, you know, you get someone who invents something and then a company buys the rights and then they reproduce it. It's never usually the same.
Mm. It happens in everything, you know, like even car dealerships start to take over towns and stuff like that, start financing the cars themselves to people who can't afford it and then repossessing them and then reselling them and still getting the person to pay the loan off and that kind of stuff. And then buying up all the other car yards and the thing, just all on this fake debt sort of thing. And it's like the sleight of hand and deception that you go about in your daily business in this world is paramount to your success in business. And that is the way the system is structured, I believe, to squeeze out honesty, squeeze out passion, and squeeze out creativity. These
Absolutely.
Are the three things that the New World Order don't really possess anymore.
No,
and
they don't want us
to have it either.
Yeah, I mean, I spend half of my day at work helping people identify why they're getting eczema and helping them to reverse it. And I don't get paid for that. But I do it because it's a passion of mine, because I'm trying to do something for the planet, trying to help people. And hopefully one day, wherever we go, after we die, whatever happens, I can say that I did something. I tried. That gives you better satisfaction than anything.
Excuse me, an idea, because the other day I was thinking about revising my final question of the show. Usually the final question is about self-censorship. You know how we all self-censor whether or not we're on TV or radio because there's an audience listening and they might misinterpret what you say, or the judge or the host might judge you or something like that. And so if you have anything of that nature, go for your life. But now I'm thinking, when you die, on your deathbed, what do you think you would say? Let's say you were struck with a terrible affliction and you were going to die today. What would you want to say as your final words?
Well, I'd like to say that I did my best, that I tried to do something and tried to make a difference, and that I was brave at a time when I felt very weak. I still kept trying to do what was right, and I fought to try and make a difference. That's what I would say to myself. And, yeah, it gives you a purpose. I don't really know how people go around with no purpose in mind like that. They're just, you know, it's all about the dollars or the money or, you know, these ridiculous TV shows that are on wasting your brain. I don't really understand that mentality. I would hate to be like that again. I'm not saying I never was. I've spent some time, but I am actually. I know, you know, Santos. He's a friend. I know that you've interviewed him. I'm an ex-Jehovah's Witness like him. And one thing it did teach me. I was sitting there one day and I woke up. You know, sitting there, I never really wanted to go, but my mother was a witness, so I had to go. And I was sitting there and they were talking about apostates and all this sort of stuff. And I just thought, I don't want to be here. And the thing that it taught me was to always seek out the truth and not to believe everything you're spoon-fed. And in a way, you know, it did teach me, that's made me committed to doing the right thing and not believing everything I'm spoon-fed. And because of that, my daughter's still alive today. Because she would have gone into hospital with more toxins, and then they would have called it heart failure or silent asthma. It's the latest thing that's going on at the moment. People are dying of it's swelling of the airways through chemical poisoning. It might not always be, but quite often is. It happens to my daughter when she has an attack. For example, one of my sons opened up a bottle of nail polish remover in the garage the other week, and she started to smell it, and that's it. She just loses her. She just starts to go all haywire in the brain. And I give her magnesium and potassium, and I know all the things to do to bring her back. But yeah, her airway swells up, and if I was to give her Ventolin, she'd die. So you know, I suppose that's another thing I'd say on my deathbed is that I saved my daughter's life.
This is something I also think about a lot, is about the next generation. I mean, I think it's from the age of 14, I really wanted to have kids and stuff like that, and it just hasn't eventuated as yet. I'm still 27, but there's still time, maybe, depending on the outcome of 2012, whether or not the people who think that we're going to, you know, all be wiped out by something. But I was just thinking about this. That might be something that is lost on people, is that when you're gone and you have children, you have a part of you that lives on. And in my opinion, I think that's basically the point of the latter part of your life, is to attempt to give a leg up to the next generation.
Absolutely, yeah. And to teach your children.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Teaching your children something. I have the impression, by my experience going through life, that my parents virtually didn't teach me anything. You know, I was I went to high school, I went to primary school and kindergarten and all of this kind of stuff. And very little contact with my parents, really, in the earlier part of my life, and thus so the other. I mean, in terms of hour for hour, dollar for dollar, how much do you learn from your parents nowadays versus how much is forced on you, jammed down your throat by the state? It's one of those things. We'll be right back, ladies. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And don't you go change. Segment for the week. Those of you in Auckland who are listening live, yes. I have a brief public announcement for you. Get in your car, stop listening to me, not permanently, of course, but get down to the Auckland City DHBC kind of Nazi Reichstag-looking Auckland City Hospital there, because we're having a protest outside it. Now dig this. Intravenous vitamin C. Maybe some people are not aware, but for those of you who are, I'm sorry, you're going to have to suffer through it again. There's 70 years of literally award-winning research to proving the efficacy of vitamin C to cure literally anything, anything that's a virus. This is the ultimate viricide. If you are sick with swine flu, as a man named Alan Smith was here in New Zealand, they did two 60-minute stories on him. Two. If you spoke to him, you'd find out that, hey, it's only like $10 or something like that for a good infusion of that to cure your dengue fever or something of that nature, right? So naturally, the hospital gave him a little bit of some of it after having to get a lawyer because they said there was no evidence, even though there's 70 years of it. And then they gave him a little bit, and he got way better. And then they gave him a little bit more, and he got it, and he was on his feet again, right? And then they said, oh, well, it can't have been the vitamin C, you know? It must have been a bus driving by. I'm not kidding. That was what the head of Auckland City Hospital, kind of their spokesperson, said, that the medical treatment that they performed on him, vitamin C, had nothing to do with the fact that he got better. And ever since then, they've been denying vitamin C to anybody who asked for it. And people are dying. I think there's something like 16 cases leading up from the story a year or two ago
up till today where people have asked for vitamin C, have been refused it by the hospital, and have died as a result. This is genocide. These people are scum. They are liars and filth who serve the agenda of eugenics and scumbaggery. So please, for the love of Norwegian cheese, turn up there to Park Ave from midday till 2 p.m., the protest is, so it starts in about 15 minutes' time, and we'll be there for about 2 hours. Alan Smith will be there leading the protest, as well as Jonathan Eisen from Uncensored Magazine, Catherine Smith from the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. I'll be there as well as soon as my my man Dan comes and picks me up and gets us down there. And there will be much scumbaggery to talk about and expose, and a lot of fun to be had while you're pointing a finger at these filthy, disgusting trash and the murderous genocide that they commit. Speaking of murderous genocide, Angela Foreman from Wagga Wagga, Wagga Wagga, is my guest. And you wanted to talk about your own little personal genocidal campaign, or rather, anti-genocidal campaign.
Yeah, well, I mean, in New South Wales schools in Australia, not in the other states mostly, I think, they're using unflued gas heating, which is full of formaldehyde. They're sitting children in a classroom with deadly formaldehyde. They're wondering why they're getting headaches, why they're getting sick, why they're up at the hospital, because it can take hours for the effects of formaldehyde to take effect. Next thing you know, you think your child's got the flu or asthma, but really they're suffering with formaldehyde poisoning. And I'm urging all parents to go up to their schools to find out what chemicals are being used and get the MSDSs from their offices. And they legally have to give it to them. And look at those MSDSs and find out what they mean, because I know that they're still using these chemicals. And around my area in the soap kitchen, I've even got doctors that send in people to see me when they can't fix them. I can identify which schools are using the deadly toxic poisons because I see loads of the children coming in with terrible symptoms. So as parents, it's our job to protect our children. And sometimes I tell parents this, go down and get the MSDSs, and they're all worried about what the school's going to think. What's the secretary going to think if I go down there? Meanwhile, their child is sick and potentially is developing cancer or God knows what from these deadly toxic poisons, and they're embarrassed to go down there. I say, go down there. I've got my children out of school now in distance ed because my daughter was overtoxified, and my youngest, who's 7, he was exposed to it for a year and he's got symptoms from it too. I'm not about to trust them anymore. I went through 2 years of trying to work with the education department. They kept putting my children into the unflued gas rooms. You know, still exposure. Get down there and find out what they're doing in their classrooms worldwide, because I know it's not just Australia. I know it's all over the world. There's no regulations. There probably is in some countries, but certainly not in Australia to protect children. And our own minister has told me that he can't do anything about it. The local can't do anything about it. No one seems to be able to do anything about it. And the only people that are profiting are the chemical companies and their friends, who obviously want them to keep selling their deadly toxic poison and putting it in our children's classrooms. And they've got, that's their building blocks. They're growing. Their cells are growing. And they're being, their growth, heaven help them when they get older. How much cancer is going to come out of this? And another woman in the 1990s had the same fight as me. Her name is Anne Want, and she's from the Australian Chemical Trauma Alliance. And she has had the same fight. They tried to have her put into, have her children taken off her. And this is what happens to people who fight this. And that's why we need to stand together. Because I'll be damned if I'm going to let them take my children off me. But, you know, this is the type of thing. It'd be better if I was on crack. That'd be fine. I can keep my children, give them a Diet Coke. And but no, don't give them organic food and reject poisons, because it's normal for children to have asthma and autism and everything, but it's not normal to not want your child to be exposed to those things so they don't get them. Apparently that's not normal, Vinny, apparently.
I just think you're a classic case of bad parenting, and, you know, we should... absolutely, and we should definitely protect your children from good health by kidnapping them for no reason.
with the child protective services, and then passing them around the pedophile network like a bag of Oreos.
Oh yeah, and then they'd be sitting them in, you know, they'd be giving them all the chemicals, and my daughter would die, and they'd say, "Oh, she was going to die anyway." You know, this is a healthy child, but apparently, according to our education department, I heard firsthand that they don't think that chemicals. There's no such thing as chemical sensitivity. Did you know that? And apparently, poisoning doesn't exist. In the Western world. The Western world, it exists in other lands where apparently, but because we're educated, apparently we don't get poisoned by poisons.
See, funny I love that. Because, I don't know, one person, a friend of my girlfriend's said to me that fluoride's good for you, it's not bad at all, and blah, 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 and you're just a crazy conspiracy theorist. And I go, okay, you believe toothpaste is all good for you, okay? And that sort of thing. So I'll tell you what, you can squeeze a whole tube of toothpaste into your mouth. I'll give you $50, and I'll film it, and we'll see if you die from it. Okay, put your fracking life on the line for your beliefs is my belief.
All you have to do is Google it. It's the chemical waste from the nuclear power plants, the aluminium chimney stacks and Monsanto's chimneys. They put in wet scrubbers to stop the toxic waste coming out, and that's what they put in our water supply. I mean, how simple is that? Google it, people. For crying out loud, Google it.
It's not that difficult.
No, it's not. A tip for people, too, who can't afford expensive filters and things. If you're going to have a bath, throw in some vitamin C. That's death to chlorine. So if you can't afford a filter, if you're travelling around, and chlorine is a very toxic poison.
So you could just squeeze a couple of lemons. You could just squeeze a couple of lemons into your bath, huh?
I haven't tried the lemons, actually, but I know just 2 grams of vitamin C.
Yeah, well, lemons have got vitamin C in them. Boom!
They've got to be fresh off the tree, though, to get the right amount of vitamin C, as in just picked.
Otherwise, you'll turn yourself into a little bubbling lemonade there.
Well, you could throw in the lemons. I throw in magnesium and vitamin C, and the water goes, it becomes non-toxic. So that is a tip for people who have sensitivities, or if you just want to feel well, if you can have a bath, I wouldn't get in regular bath water. You're just sitting in toxins.
What about salt? Iodized table salt or something like that?
Yeah, magnesium I'd recommend if you can get yourself some food-grade magnesium and some vitamin C. And you'll come out of that bath. If you're feeling sick, you just go and have one of those baths. Say if you feel the flu coming on, do a big juice and jump in a bath full of vitamin C. It'll go right through your skin and the magnesium will into your system, and you won't get that flu generally.
I've also found baking soda is a good one.
Yeah, bicarb, that's another good one because that alkalines the water and alkalines your body. So.
Again, through your skin. And, if you've got – well, basically, viruses need a low alkaline environment in order to breed, basically. It's the optimal breeding conditions is a low alkaline, right? So if you've got plenty of alkalines, you basically can't get sick because the viruses can't take root, they can't replicate, and they'll just die as soon as they touch you.
That's right. That's the way it works. Get into all the natural things.
Indeed. Do some research, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to as many sources as you can. And before you try things, verify them and research them, because a lot of natural therapies can actually be a little bit dangerous if you don't know what you're doing, just like everything, okay? For example, drinking Coke if you don't know what you're doing. It's a level 6 biotoxin when it comes off the ships, and you have to wear a oxygen tank, because if you breathe one whiff of that Shiite Muslim, you'll flop down on the ground and die in 5 seconds if you're lucky. And then they take it down to the bottling plant, water it down with municipal water, sell it to you under the brand name The Real Thing. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.